Hey everyone, it's Rolando, and it is the Monday after World Pride, so, you know, I'm assuming everyone had a good time, hoping you guys did at least, and maybe you're feeling a little hungover, I don't know, no judgment, but I know that me and Nicole were a little busy celebrating the holidays, so we really didn't have much time to record a new episode, so instead what we thought we would do is give you one of our favorite episodes because we really loved the remake. I'm talking about One Day at a Time. And in case you didn't hear, after season 3 had dropped on Netflix, the show was canceled and we were heartbroken. I think we even mentioned it in some of the news episodes and we're like really urging people to really, really, you know, watch the show or do something about it. And you know what? Turns out someone did because Pop Channel or Pop Network, I'm not sure what it is. We'll have a link in the show notes, but Pop has decided to pick up the show for the 4th season. To my knowledge, it's the first time a show from a streaming network is being picked up by a cable channel. Usually it's the opposite way around. So that just shows you the wacky time we are when it comes to production, right? We hope you enjoy the episode. We hope you have a great week. And we will be back next week with Child's Play. Enjoy the show. Hey, you guys. Is that good? Is that good? I think that was good. So this week, we're going to be going to apartment 402 in Indianapolis in the 1970s. And then we'll be going to apartment 402 in Los Angeles starting in 2017. And that's because we're going to be covering this week one of the most shockingly like politically like hot topic-y shows of it's two generations right there. We'll be talking about One Day at a Time, and that's all I really have to say for this opening. Nicole, you got anything?
No, we'll take this one second at a time.
All right, I like that. Let's do this. This is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals,
an original podcast about unoriginality.
All right, guys, welcome to Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. Before we start, we just want to just say who we have here. We got me, Rolando.
Me, Nicole.
And we are being produced today by Eddie Z. Eddie, say hi.
Hey, guys.
Eddie Z.
Has a microphone today that works.
Yes.
That's super exciting.
I'm so happy about this.
Thank you, Amazon. So before we begin this episode, I just want to remind you all to please follow us on our social media. You can follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram is at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. You can also find us on Facebook. Our page is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. And of course, as always, you can email us directly. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And please be sure to rate us and comment on your podcasting apps.
Yeah.
All right.
So now that we got that out of the way, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's cold and it's chilly, but I'm in good spirits.
You know what? It's actually not as cold as it's been this week. We've had colder days.
That's true,
week.
But on this Wednesday, it's going to drop to 4 degrees.
Oh, I can't wait. That's my favorite.
I wish I lived in LA or Indianapolis at this point. God, even though I don't know what the weather's like.
Indianapolis, isn't that like moderate? Like that's like our kind of temperature, isn't it?
At this point, I don't think our temperature is moderate. Four degrees?
Like the cold, the Colts, it gets pretty cold for the Colts.
Mm.
The football team.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I was like, what? Who the hell are the Colts?
Colts.
I'm not good with sports references. Sitcom references, I know.
But Pawnee took place in Indiana. I don't think they ever had snow in Pawnee, so maybe they don't get bad weather. Eddie Z, what's the weather like in Indianapolis?
19 degrees.
Okay, so yeah, so we get chilly out there.
That's pretty cold, yeah.
Yeah. I guess let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about One Day at a Time. This is it, this is it, this is life.
1975, crazy year. Nixon was still president. Vietnam War ended. Patty Hearst and her Stockholm Syndrome was all over the pages. I think, you know, Ted Bundy was out killing people.
Oh, yeah, fun.
So we are in the age of second wave feminism. Now, if you don't know what second wave feminism is, here's a little quick history thing. First wave of feminism was in the 1920s and such, and that's the suffragette movement, women's right to vote, you know, more of like a voice for women in society. But then it kind of just like plateaued there for a while. Mm-hmm. So in the late 60s and early 70s, women were like oh my God, we need to be fighting for our rights again. And this is the wave of feminism that really focused on putting on emphasis on like women's roles in society, like drawing attention to the fact that there's marital violence and that women get raped and that they didn't have a fair place in the workplace and, you know, their roles in sexuality and their reproductive rights and all this stuff. Monumental moment for women, right? Third wave of feminism happening in the early 90s. And we're kind of on the verge of a fourth.
Actually, according to the studies, we are in the fourth wave. I think it started in 2012 is the accepted time.
How exciting. I mean, the Me Too era is definitely a wave.
That becomes like the beginnings of the big fourth.
How exciting. Yeah, we're in a wave of feminism.
I know some stuff about feminism.
Yeah.
I had to, it's so funny, right? Because specifically this show, One Day at a Time, is about that second wave feminism.
It is.
So I had to do a lot of research on it because I'd be like, what the hell is that? We learned about it in grad school too, and I always kind of just like, okay.
Nodded your head like, I know what you're talking about.
Of course. Of course I'm a feminist, guys. Like, I believe in equal rights.
And it's, everybody knows what feminism is, but, you know, you got to know your history in order to like really understand something. So, you know, like even if you don't know anything about feminism or you do know, it's like this context is really important for this show. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes out in 1975. And it's an all-woman cast, essentially. It's a single mother and her two daughters. And this deals with issues that were reflected within the second wave feminist movement. So One Day at a Time was created by a married couple, Whitney Blake and Alan Mannings. Mm-hmm. And it was developed by Norman Lear.
Right.
And let's just throw some shows at you to let you know who Norman Lear is.
Right.
All in the Family, Sanford and Sons. The Jeffersons, Good Times, Maude.
Yeah.
I love Maude. Has like one of my favorite openings for a sitcom ever.
And then there's Maude.
And then it's just like her like walking around. So great.
It's actually crazy. The name Norman Lear, not something I was familiar with. However, all of those shows, even if I haven't watched them, I'm very culturally aware of those shows.
Yes. I mean, they had monumental ripple effects in our pop culture. Mm-hmm. And his shows really pushed boundaries.
Yes.
You know, All in the Family, like, I'm not a big fan of that show because I'm like, oh, white bigotry, huh? That's funny. But, like, at the same time, like, you know, the boundaries that they pushed within, like, his household and the things that were pushing his own limits. Mm-hmm. And the fact that these people exist in America, you know? The Jeffersons, Good Times, you know, two all-black centered families. Sanford and Sons, too.
Sanford and Sons,
yeah. Sorry. And then Maude and, like, a show about a woman. And she was so fierce and so independent, mm-hmm. and so liberated. And then there was One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time.
So this guy, really monumental. And One Day at a Time was pretty much, I think, a sitcom inspired by the second wave feminism.
Yeah. We're talking about this show, obviously, because of the Netflix remake of it.
Yeah.
Did you know about One Day at a Time before the Netflix show?
I vaguely did.
Okay, you did.
Vaguely.
No idea on this end. Like,
but I never watched it.
Well aware of them. Mm. One Day at a Time was not one of them.
I knew vaguely of it because of my mother.
Okay.
And I knew the song, This Is It. You know, that like theme song.
I don't know the lyrics of this song.
Yeah. But we're just rocking along here, though.
He's been singing that song for the last 2 days.
Yeah, singing wrong lyrics like crazy.
Yeah, so, okay, so I think it's a show inspired by second wave feminism, and my mom really like remembered it fondly and all this stuff. So, the show. The cast was Bonnie Franklin, who played the single mother, yes. Anne Romano. And she had two daughters, Mackenzie Phillips, who played Julie, the older rebellious one, mm-hmm. and Valerie Bertinelli of Weight Watchers fame.
She's also in Hot in Seattle.
Hot in Cleveland.
Hot in Cleveland, yes.
Hot in Seattle. Hot in rainy Seattle. Yeah, so she plays the younger sister, the wisecracking Barbara. You know, and there's always got to be your staple sarcastic asshole on a show. And the youngest daughter does that. And it's charming coming from her.
It's actually... Yeah, it really is. Watching the episodes that I was able to watch, it's kind of endearing. It doesn't come off like grating sometimes, as it can be, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I guess the fourth unofficial cast member, even though he's very much an official one, but it really focuses on these three. But then the superintendent.
Schneider.
Dwayne Schneider is also a recurring character for, I think, the entire series.
Yes, he's actually, out of the entire cast, it was...
Bonnie Franklin.
Thank you, Eddie Z. Bonnie Franklin, Valerie Bertinelli, and then the guy who plays Schneider. They were the ones who were in every episode for the full 9 years.
Yeah. Ooh, the cheese man, Mackenzie Phillips was. I went down the rabbit hole with that woman.
Mm. Oh, Mackenzie Phillips.
Yeah.
Oh, what a fascinating life.
Oh my gosh, the juice there.
So I knew Mackenzie Phillips out of the whole cast. Like, she's probably the one I was most familiar with, only because I used to watch this show in the late 90s, early aughts on
called
the Disney
Oprah.
Channel. No, called So Weird.
She was
the mom. And then, like, it was a few years after that that it all blew up that, like, she was, you know, sexually molested by her father.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's...
And the drug abuse. So yeah, she was fired from the show.
Fired from the show.
Season 5.
Yeah. And then came back as, like, a recurring cast member because she had a really bad substance abuse. Yeah. And just to hint at the stuff with her father, who was John Phillips of The Mamas and the Papas. Apparently, though, it was, like, consensual. And so, like, okay, so go onto Wikipedia and go onto Google and go down that rabbit hole.
Was that from her book? I think that's kind of the stuff that was in the book. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember the interview. I think she did it with Oprah or maybe Barbara Walters.
Oprah. I think it was Oprah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So representation in terms of the 70s and in terms of, like, this kind of a life, you know, a single mother raising two daughters who were, I think, you know, with the times, you know, and it was a show that, like, really wanted to show this is what is happening with women and this is where society is going. So in terms of representation, very important. Mm-hmm. And, like, the things that they tackled, Rolando and I were talking about some of the episodes that we both caught and, like, pressure to have sex and like, pregnancy and all this stuff, dating and, but, like, outside of, you know, love and sex, there was, like, a lot of other issues.
Yeah, yeah. I think, so, interestingly enough, so, Eddie actually used to watch the show a lot, like, regularly in syndication growing up.
Uh-huh.
And according to Eddie, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said this is one of the first shows to tackle infertility.
They're one of the storylines with a Barbara's character, where her and her husband went trying to conceive a baby and they had to face the fact that they may not be able to. And then they went into kind of a adoption, looking for adoption. But the kid that they were fostering, they ended up taking him away due to him being, it's interesting because he was a Latino kid. Mm-hmm. So they ended up placing him with friends of his family, of his parents, because they felt that it was more culturally appropriate if he grew up within his own culture.
Hmm.
So that was just interesting.
Wow. Yeah, see, just from the few episodes that I watched, like, this show clearly on that cutting edge of, like, fucking tackling topics that, I don't know, like, as a society, we just became too pussyfooted to, like, really talk about on TV anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's mind-boggling, right? It kind of, like, television kind of regressed after the 70s and the 80s, right? Because when you think of, like, the shows that I grew up with, like Full House, Step by Step,
Growing Pains,
specifically.
A perfect example, yeah.
Like, these shows were really sugarcoating life.
Watered down, yeah.
And, I mean, this came out in the 70s, right, this show?
Yeah, so One Day at a Time lasted from 1975 to 1984.
Yeah, so it's just crazy, too, though, how, I was just thinking about this, I was watching these shows, these episodes, and just like, how in the hell is the Brady Bunch much more culturally significant than this show, One Day at a Time?
Mm,
like, you know what I mean? Like, just, I get it. They were different topics, different subject matters, but, like, the shit that they were kind of talking about in the 1970s, in the original One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
It's like, actually still relevant.
It is, yeah. And I would have liked to have seen this on syndication instead of fucking 3 hours of Friends back to back.
No, I won't. I disagree with you there. Leave Friends alone.
Let's have an hour of Friends.
Because Friends
and
dealt with
shows.
Infertility. That was the first time I learned about infertility.
On Friends. Answers. Dropping that, though. But, like, the point is that give me an hour of Friends and I'll move on and watch some other shows. And, like, definitely, especially because you're right. Like, this shit got watered down in the Reagan era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was almost too family friendly. And it's like, well, what do you think? Families are this cookie cutter?
Right.
This nuclear in terms of 1950s representation, you know? So it's, like, a little disheartening to see what happened after that. I completely agree with you. But it is really great to watch, like, because it's actually funny.
Yeah. I was surprised at me laughing at a show from the 1970s.
He was laughing out loud.
I was laughing out loud. I was just like, oh, this is funny. This is witty. This is actually good.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, something's age, but, like, some of those jokes are still, like, pretty on the money.
You like that slap scene, huh?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So, one of the scenes that I caught, I was hunting down this episode just to see it, but I could not find it. But apparently, in the beginning of season 3, Julie is dating an older man, a 40-year-old doctor.
Ooh.
Yeah. And what's it called? They're kissing in the living room. And, of course, mom walks in, starts, like, kind of going off on the guy, right? For, like, making out with a girl who is, like, 17, maybe 18, I guess.
Oh, God, it's incredibly gross.
And what's it called? Julie becomes the brat that she is. She's just like, Mom, stop. Why are you jealous? Kind of shaking her. And Bonnie Franklin just slaps her. And then it ends with, like, to be continued next week. And it's so funny, right? Because she basically slapped her into next week. That's how hard that slap was.
And I was hunting down that episode so badly because it was just, it was satisfying to see that kind of slap.
Yeah.
Because you don't see parents slapping their children on TV anymore.
Yeah. Oh, your daughter kissing a fucking 40-year-old on a couch. Yeah, you kind of need
some slap, some senses
in her. Slap, yes. Slap all the senses in her.
And then she gives you lip about it?
That's the other thing, right? I think that was a more infuriating part of why
you need. She calls you jealous? Like, uh-uh, bitch. Slap. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing, too. The daughters, they're real in the sense where they don't make the best fucking choices. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like, they have their real faults. The only character that didn't seem to have as many faults, and I was like, oh, is this like, was the mom? Like, is the mom this put together? Really?
Was Especially? She put together, though?
I felt like for, at least for her daughters.
She was, I feel like, so the, and again, I haven't seen the whole show, so I can't say this, but
yeah, neither
what
can I
will I. say, this is the ones that I've seen. It wasn't so much if she was put together, like as a person, she was a very flawed human being. I think she was put together enough to be, like she was an adult.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I think she's always, anytime she was trying to teach a lesson to her children, it always came with that stipulation. It's just like, I don't know the answers.
Yeah.
I am doing the best that me as your mother, I'm trying to do the best I can for you and trying to make sure that I lead by example.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the very first episode of the show, Mackenzie Phillips' character, she wants to go, I think, on an overnight hike party with like boys. And obviously, what does that lead to? An orgy. Obviously, right?
Obviously.
So, you know, she asks her mom, she's trying to be like, she believes that her mom would be cool enough to kind of let her go. And mm-hmm. her mom was just like, absolutely not. Like, I don't trust these boys. What are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
And, you know, usually on these TV shows, it kind of gets to that point of just like, okay, fine, this is what they're going to argue about, right? But it got kind of dark for a second there because they address the fact that she's a divorcee. So Julie, Mackenzie Phillips' character, what she does is she says, it's just like, all right, fine. If you won't let me do this, then I'm just going to go move back with dad. Ooh. And there's like this big standoff right there in the very first episode. I'm like, what the, what? And, you know, again, Anne, kind of this really strong, she's like a very strong woman committed. And mm-hmm. she's just like, no, you're not going to go. And if you want to go to your dad, that's fine. She kind of says like, then go. And I was just so surprised to see that, like, to see actually she gives her like $1.25 to take the bus to see her father, and it's just,
oh
like,
my
get
god
out.
That is so 70s though. This is how women got murdered easily in the 70s. Okay, I'm just gonna say that would never happen.
Just running off.
Do not give your child money and just to take the bus at nighttime. I'm sorry. Continue.
But no, I was so 70s. It, you know, it's just one of those. I was surprised. It was for a first episode. Like, that's supposed to be episode one, season one. You
yeah,
know?
No, I love
and
that.
And it's just to deal with these kind of topics, I was just like, wow, okay. I mean, they're talking about sex right there in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's yeah. Yeah. But that's realistic. And mm-hmm. it was the 70s. And it was like, guys, because also, like, the fucking revolution that happened in the 60s well into the 70s, too, you couldn't ignore it. And that's why it was such a great time for stuff like sitcoms and representation.
Yeah.
I'm a little sad that it's not an easily accessible show.
Yes.
I don't know where it's rerun. I think I read that it's rerun on Logo, but I don't have Logo
I don't
anymore.
Think I have Logo either.
Which is, oh my god, we're terrible.
It's not, well, it's not, you know, you have to pay extra for it.
Well, I don't have cable, period.
I have cable, and you have to pay extra for it, and
yeah.
I won't.
And that's bullshit. Why should we have to pay for the only fucking channel that has gay representation?
Oh, I don't think that channel does gay representation really much anymore.
Well, after they lost RuPaul, they lost a lot.
Yeah.
But
they kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But digressing there, like, it wasn't easily, at least me growing up, I didn't know where I could find it. Eddie mm-hmm. said that he was able to watch it in reruns growing up, but, like, I know it wasn't shoved in my face like some other sitcoms were.
Eddie, I think you were watching, like, I guess you were watching, like, CBS, which growing up for me was, like, kind of this, you know, the old people channel.
Yeah.
Would not touch that. I'm watching the WB.
Yeah, I really watched
it's so
Nickelodeon.
Funny, I'm not sure where I saw it, but I just felt like it was always part of, like, what I saw when it came to, like, Three's Company, One Day at a Time, All in the Family, all this kind of shows and syndication.
I just feel personally like, I'm from my own point of view, it was nowhere to be found. And now it's even harder to find unless you want to pay $20 to watch one season. You know, so it's such right. a shame. Like, something like this should be more accessible is the point.
I agree.
But also, and I think we were talking about this last week, you know, that era isn't really part of streaming culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like mid-80s and on, and that's what people want to binge.
That's true.
And like, we should, you know, be like, let's bring back some of the 70s stuff, because these are really good shows.
Especially this one, just because of still, I guess, some of his messages were still as pertinent then as they are today.
Yeah.
Which is sad for American society that we haven't progressed
yeah.
in the last 50 years?
Yeah. 50 fucking years. Almost 50 years. From 1975, almost.
Crazy.
But yeah, you know, millennial, it's not millennial nostalgia, but it's also, I think, Rolando and I are two millennials who are saying this, like, it's kind of inspiring to see this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I take this representation.
And it's good. Yeah. You know, we could rewatch The Golden Girls a lot, and that's a show that's very ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a show that easily could fall in that realm.
Definitely. And we were saying, too, that Mackenzie Phillips, like, left and became a recurring character. Mm-hmm. You know, both of the young daughters, we stayed with them in their lives long enough to watch them get married. And I think the older one, Julie, had a baby, and she named her Annie after her mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I remember one of the last scenes. I don't know if this was the last scene, but I remember the scene where I guess they fired her. Was the Julie is like telling her mom, is like, if I move back home, like, it's, you know, you got to give me some freedom or I'm not moving back home. And then, you know, Anne is just like, then stay. And then she just walks off and to an applause. I remember because I heard the applause from the audience. I'm just like, damn, like, that's cold.
Wow.
You won't see that on TV, right? I don't see that often enough on TV, but sometimes that is the right choice. If you have a toxic child, it's just like, get rid of them.
Yeah. You know what? That's one thing I liked about the show is that Anne's not their friend. She is their mother.
Exactly. True. Yes, yes.
And you, she does what a mother has to do. Honest and
frank conversations with her.
Yeah.
She was always your mother.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way it has to be. Yeah. You know, we got kind of like lost in that, especially in terms of representation.
That's a very, very good way of putting it.
Can you please tell our listeners where we can find these episodes? Because it was so hard for me to find episodes.
I Googled it. So mm-hmm. I Googled One Day at a Time, 1970s, full episodes. And I think Daily Motion was the site.
Okay.
So once you click the first episode, which was, I think, Julie contemplating her virginity.
Yeah.
Once you're in that playlist, there's like a good 15 episodes.
Wow.
Episodes available.
That's so crazy. Or you could always pay like $15 to watch a season at a time on Amazon. Yeah. So
I thought only season one was available, though.
Oh, no, wait. You're right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
It's not even,
I think it's on iTunes.
I'm not going to give Apple my money.
Oh, they have all my money, so yeah, they don't need more.
He's like, no, thank you.
So it's a good show. It's worth checking out. You know, if you can't hear how excited we got about this 70s show.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised. We're way more excited than I thought we were going to be going in. Because, to be quite honest, it was pulling teeth for Eddie to convince us to do this episode, despite the fact that I could say at least two out of the three of us very much enjoyed the remake, the Netflix remake.
Well, I don't remember it being an issue for me. I was always down to do one at a time.
I actually was afraid that you didn't like it before. I didn't know that you would like the remake.
Yeah, well, okay, so opinions about One Day at a Time, the original and the remake. Well, why don't we just get into the remake?
Let's go for it. This is it. This is life, the one you get to go and have a ball. Who does that song?
Gloria
right?
Estefan.
Gloria Estefan and Emilio Estefan, who arranged it for the for the new one.
Yeah.
What a way to get you right in the mood of this. Like, what? It's a good song.
Mm-hmm.
The first one gives you, I don't know, it just felt kind of generic, the original one. Sorry. But the remake version of this song, man, did it do a good job of like kind of getting you that mind state of like where we are, who these people are.
Yeah.
With that said, who are these people? How did we get here? Why are we talking about this one?
So I know that this was actually developed by the same people who developed the original.
Norman Lear apparently went to Sony and said, it's just like, yo, I want to make a reimagining of One Day at a Time, but with Hispanics. And I'm sure Sony was just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're like outrageous. 150-year-olds. What are you doing here?
How did you get Norman, such a woke idea?
Yeah, Norman's just like, I have like a Kennedy Center honors, so please, like, respect my decisions here.
I swear, it's like you wiretapped the room that you heard this conversation. So they had this idea of, pretty much what Rolando said. And so Netflix was the one to pick it up.
Yes.
One Day at a Time has been on for now, actually, as of late January 2019, the third season will be coming out very shortly.
Yeah, that's why actually we're recording this one.
Yes,
we're gonna
very timely.
SEO.
So so go watch it, guys. So there's not really much to say. I don't know if it's won awards or anything.
Ooh, actually, I don't know if it's won any awards. Yeah. I'd be very sad if it hasn't, actually, because
of Rita Moreno.
But actually, before we go into this, so
it's won the Teen Choice Award.
Oh, that doesn't count. It's not a real award.
It's been nominated several times. Primetime Emmy Award.
Oh, good. All right, good. That's okay, great. Good. I'm happy with nominations. What's it been nominated for?
TV Land Awards. It won. It was nominated for the GLAAD Media Awards.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's yeah. Good.
It won the television. The Television Academy Awards.
Okay. Yeah, those are pretty prestigious. Okay. But what's it called? What Emmys was it nominated for?
Primetime Television Program, okay. Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress,
yeah.
Best Young Actor, Best Comedic TV.
For the cool. Emmys, wow, okay.
Yeah, it's Netflix, so I don't know what the ratings are, but I assume it's a very successful show.
If it got picked up for 3 seasons, because yeah. Netflix, as of late, has been axing shows that just haven't performed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this cast, they live in L.A.
They live in L.A.
So we relocated the family, and their name is Alvarez. And in this family, it is a single mother, but she is raising a daughter and a son.
Yes.
Their names are Elena and Alejandro, who they call Alex. Mm-hmm. And the mother's name is Penelope this time.
Are you adding the accent for effect here? Or?
Because that's how you should say these names. Oh. It's not Elena, it's Elena.
Elena, for sure. Alejandro, I think you can say... Oh, did I say it with an accent? I guess I said it with an accent. I didn't even realize.
And his name is Alex. The mother's name is Penelope, but I think the grandmother, Lydia,
Lupita.
Calls her Lupe or Lupita.
Lupita.
And they call Alex Papito.
Papito.
And then the character Schneider is once again here.
Yes,
Schneider. As the superintendent. Mm-hmm. So the similarities...
Wait, you forgot one major character from this show.
No, I said the grandmother, Lydia.
Oh, you said Lydia?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Well, Lydia deserves a little more.
I mean, she's
more.
The star of the show. She is the star. Let's be honest.
Played by Rita Moreno.
The iconic EGOT winner, Rita Moreno.
EGOT, man. Mm-hmm. Good for...
Did you pick up on the West Side Story reference in one episode?
I don't think I... Yeah, what's the reference?
You guys don't remember that? Did you see the episode where they were like, you should probably become a citizen because it's dangerous times? And she's like, I like to live in America.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that one. Yes. She's done a couple of references. That one, she also like referenced her time on The Election Company.
Yeah.
With you. Here's you guys. Which is how I opened the show.
You do it so well.
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Rita Moreno.
Yeah.
So, go on.
No, I was just going to... Rita Moreno is
everything.
An icon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this woman was in Singing in the Rain.
A treasure.
You know, slept with Marlon Brando and Elvis Presley. I
and
mean,
talked
you,
about it.
Yeah, and openly talked about it.
Like not one to shy away from the topic. She's just mm-hmm. like, she opens. She's in open arms. Just like, talk to... I want to answer questions.
Yeah. Do you know what she won her Emmy for?
Ooh, that's a good question. No, actually, I do not know.
For her guest star appearance in The Muppet Show.
No way!
Yeah, it's a fabulous episode. I mean, she's just so good at everything she does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she is quite the star of the show. So this family, the Alvarez family, they're Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
I myself have Cuban in me.
Yes. I am Peruvian and Puerto Rican.
Just like Marina Moreno is Puerto Rican.
Yes.
Playing a Cuban.
Actually, a lot of the cast is Puerto Rican.
Yeah, which is funny because I was like, why did they make a Cuban?
But... Oh, the reason is the writer, the head, the showrunner is Cuban.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so a lot of her influences were... She's a showrunner. She's also the head writer. Her and Mike. Her name is Gloria Calderon Calet.
Oh.
She's the showrunner and head writer for it. She was actually a producer for How I Met Your Mother. Have you seen Rules of Engagement on CBS?
I've heard of it.
It's not a good show, but she's a producer there too. And actually, the CW's iZombie, which is like the weird one of her list of work.
Huh.
And her and Mike Royce, they're the two big writers for the show. His main credits have been Everybody Loves Raymond.
Mm.
And what's the other one? Oh, Men of a Certain Age. Ever heard of that show?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's another show that had actually Ray Romano.
Okay.
I guess, yeah, so like I said, a lot of the writing came from Gloria and her experiences as a Cuban American.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how actually so Penelope is a veteran?
Yes.
Do you know how they got to that kind of storyline, having her character be a veteran?
How?
Norman Lear is a veteran.
Oh.
So they wanted to honor him and they made her a vet. And I think that was probably the smartest decision the show made.
Yeah.
Because it makes it impossible to question her American, like her American heritage by being a vet. Not that it should be questioned ever, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, you cannot say that she isn't American.
Yeah.
She's a vet.
She served this country. Yeah.
She is like, she's a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another thing that they changed, which I love because sometimes she gets a little off the walls and they have this whole episode in where she's like, I think I'm going to stop going off my, I think I'm going to go off my antidepressants.
Yeah, she's suffering from PTSD and mm-hmm. she's getting medicated as a result. And
raising a family by herself, mm-hmm. essentially with the help of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like really timely and stuff, which is why I find Penelope, other than the fact that it's a Cuban household, a little bit more relatable than Anne, because like I was saying before, I guess that was the comparison I was trying to make, where I was like, she wasn't as flawed as I would have liked her to have been.
I agree with you there. I agree. Penelope as a character has much more flaws than Anne.
Yeah.
And as a result, she feels a little more like a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penelope, vet, suffers from PTSD on antidepressants.
Divorcee. By the end of season one, she's officially a divorcee.
Yes. Two children, Elena, who ends up coming out as a lesbian
yes.
to her family and really like woke and liberal, you know.
Very woke, very liberal.
Very, especially in terms of the LGBTQ community. It is
very in your face how every right, she's like, it's funny because like her grandma is just always annoyed by it.
Like, yeah. You know? Yeah. Because yeah, it's like the clash of the two generations and stuff.
Because her grandma's super open-minded. It's just like, mm-hmm. I'm just so tired of hearing about it all the time.
Yeah.
That's the mindset that she comes. Yeah, she's a social justice warrior. That's how she's actually called herself.
There you go. Yeah. Then there's Alex, who's just like, to me, an average young boy.
Yeah. There's, I guess he's the character that they probably haven't developed much.
Yeah.
If not, but they've given him storylines that you can actually like relate to, I suppose. Specifically, like, I think one of his storylines was the fact he didn't want to be called Papito. Mm-hmm. Or he didn't want his parents to be, or his mom and grandma to be so loud at baseball games because he gets picked on as a result.
But then that episode turned into a anti-Trump episode. Yeah.
It turned into a very anti-Trump message, but I was all for that message because...
Well, because the people who are very affected by it are the Latino community, mm-hmm. so... oh, yeah, and I heard her Elena called herself Latinx.
Latinx, yeah.
Latinx and stuff, and then she explained it to someone and they were like, okay. So that was interesting because other than for our podcast and in articles, I've never really heard that.
It's so funny. I read a lot of like scholarly articles and it's very popular.
Oh, you're so learning. Yeah, I'm so learning. Well, good for you. And then the grandmother, Lydia.
Lydia.
Who is the first generation.
Yes. Immigrants came out during the exile.
Mm-hmm. And her Cuban heritage means a lot to her. There is tons of Celia Cruz in this show.
Yes.
And who I also grew up with. The thing about One Day at a Time is that they're both very relatable shows, you know?
Yes.
I know a lot of people who, they even said it in Fight Club, where it's like we're a generation of children raised without our fathers and stuff. I know a lot of people who, for some reason or another, I know most of us were raised by our mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I found common. I'm not speaking for an entire generation, but I know a lot of people who just have absent fathers and stuff. So the single mother is very much common, I think. More common than, say, a single father. And on top of that, this show represents a Cuban household,
mm-hmm.
single mother,
mm-hmm.
young lesbian, doesn't mm-hmm. speak the language. My God, it's my fucking life. It's so ridiculous. The little things that I recognize is, oh my God, those are my grandparents, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh my God, that's my house and stuff. So I find it to be an incredibly relatable show
mm-hmm.
and something I haven't really seen ever before.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, the show is crazy how much I could relate to it.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not Cuban, right? I'm Puerto Rican, though. It's just like the only difference is that we were in exile. Like we just came. A lot of Puerto Ricans came like willingly.
Yeah.
But yeah, my grandma was Puerto Rican. Like I see a lot of my grandma through Marita Moreno's performance. And actually, Marita Moreno, she based her performance
mm-hmm.
off her own mother.
Aww.
Yeah. That's like kind of not a tribute, like she's acting, so
yeah.
But yeah, that's where she got a lot of those cues, like the accent and stuff, and she pulls it off so well.
If you don't know, Rita Moreno speaks English beautifully, and so she's very much acting.
So I actually didn't. So I did not know much about Rita Moreno until I watched this show, and I started doing research on her because she was so fascinating. And you know, obviously, she was
icon, legend,
icon. Yeah, and as more I learned about her, the more it's just like, how could you not love her?
Oh my God, yeah, she's a force to be fucking reckoned with.
Shame on me. I'll admit this for not knowing enough about her up until the show, but I was surprised when I found out. I saw an interview with her, right, and her English is so perfect. She's so well spoken. Her performance as Lydia, how I think so. it's funny, right? You say this show is so relatable. Mm-hmm. Is it only relatable to us? Because a lot of the stuff that goes on a TV show, especially with that family, which is, I think a lot of Hispanic families are very, they're not patriarchies necessarily. It's true. That grandma that has like the utmost respect, even more so than a grandfather.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she's not making decisions, there's because a respect. Because she's at home. There, right. Yeah. There's that relatable aspect of it because I grew up with both my parents, mm-hmm. but my grandma was the most present in my life because she was the one who watched me and my sister growing up. Yeah. My parents worked, you know, full-time jobs. So, yeah, just watching her relationship with her grandchildren, I think it always brings a tear to my eye because it just reminds me so much aww. About my grandma.
Oh, there were so many times I cried watching this show.
This is true. This show for a comedy makes you cry a lot, which is actually supposedly the same thing that happened in the original one, too. Like in the original one, you would watch. It's a comedy, and yet you're crying sometimes.
Well, to answer your question, though, is it only relatable to us because we're Spanish? You know, when I watch One Day at a Time, I relate to the things I relate, but there's a lot that I can't relate to because I didn't grow up in a house like that. Mm-hmm. So just because a person, if you're not Latino, please watch this show.
I agree.
Just because you didn't grow up and you can't relate on the little things, overall, it's still a great show. There's other things you can relate to, and representation, you know, like it matters in terms of relatability, of course. But like, watch it because it's a good frickin' show. Mm-hmm. And like, see what it's like, maybe out of curiosity of what a good representation of a Latino household would look like.
Yeah.
I also think that the Quinces episode, the season one finale, was really interesting. Quinces
was actually like a storyline for like the first season.
Right? Yeah, that was an arc, right?
That was the arc of, man, could any Hispanic relate to that, right? Like if your parents had even $100 worth of disposable income, like they were throwing you a Quinces for your daughters. Guys didn't get one, unfortunately for me. But
no, it's not part of our tradition.
I've been to so many.
But it was a beautiful way of intertwining a coming out story with a coming of age story.
Yeah, for sure.
How do they kind of weave these two stories together in the character Elena?
And it's heartbreaking because essentially we meet the father. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes back and she comes out to him and he's just so not okay with it.
Right.
So devastated that he abandons her daughter during her Quinces. During the first dance. He doesn't dance with her. He leaves.
Yeah, he's already angry. Right. He's already... All right. So So this is what I'm talking about with the show handling kind of these topics like really well. That's another topic that I think the show handled kind of beautifully.
Yes.
Because even the mom, and when she's talking to Schneider about like her daughter just coming out to her, mm-hmm. I think her reaction is very, very normal, in which it's just like, I'm not homophobic. I don't know why. I'm just not okay with this. You know, it takes a second to process.
Yeah.
You know, like my mom, if same thing happened with her when you know, she found out that I was gay, right? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't, you just, there's not, sometimes TVs make these just like moments where just like parents open their arms to you. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case. And I think it handled it well with Penelope, but I think it was devastatingly true that I think more people in the LGBT community can relate to, shockingly.
Yeah.
Is the fact that it's just like, there also is going to be the moments where they're not going to accept you.
No, for sure. And tragic. That's the thing. That was the same thing when I came out to my mom. She didn't, like, you know, she just knew that life was going to be hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And life is hard for people of this community.
Yeah.
You know, and it shows, like, you just being yourself can cause strains in relationships. Unfortunately, people will not understand you and accept you. And that's like, that was interesting to see. Like, it did make me think of my mother, because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, you know, you're not. It's not wrong as much as, well, one, you're not familiar with it, but two, you know what's in store for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sad, and it's understandable because that is the reality of it all.
Especially, we're not the only culture that, like, this is not a big thing yet. Mm-hmm. But, like, in Hispanic culture, like, you know, homosexuality isn't as open, as it is in, like, white America yet. You know?
Yeah, and machismo is still very debilitating for men, mm-hmm. you know, so we see it portrayed in the father, you know, the toxic machismo identity and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that's very prominent in Latino communities is the fact that your grandparents will live with you.
Yes.
I was so glad that they wrote in a part of the grandparent that she's very much part of the household and mm-hmm. raising them, because all of us have that.
True.
I was very much raised with my grandparents until they died 2 years ago, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the show was like crazy relatable. That one episode where, you know, she was thinking about whether or not she wanted to become a citizen, and they end it with her like listening to Celia Cruz, and like she's surrounded by all of her like Cuban things, and, you know, talking about how she had to, what's that word? She had to renounce her Cuban citizenship.
Yes.
I don't know if my grandparents had to do that or not. Mm-hmm. I was like, is that the reality though? That's like, I wish they were alive and I could ask them, sadly. But that's like heartbreaking, you know, and that's something.
I wonder if it's only because of Cuba.
I do, because of our relationships right. with them and stuff.
I don't think they had to make my mom. She became a
citizen from Peru. But still, like identity and cultural identity, mm-hmm. you know, and like it's very important, especially for people who are like first, second, even third generation families, mm-hmm. you know, like new to this country and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So just like they really tackle a lot of things that I find relatable.
I agree.
And I think need representation.
Yeah.
On Netflix. Not TV, Netflix.
We talked a little bit about this character, but Schneider, I think Schneider. So we didn't talk really much about Schneider from the original 1970s version.
Yeah.
But Schneider in the original One Day at a Time, he was the handyman. He was kind of a pig, right? He was always hitting on Anne.
Yeah.
A lot. And despite the fact, I think there was one episode where she called him. I was like, aren't you married? And he's like, yeah, but I have so much seed to like pass around and stuff. And she's just like, ew.
Gross.
Yeah. Like that's almost verbatim one of the jokes in the show. And yet, Schneider, he is weirdly enough kind of like this voice of not reason, wisdom. I wouldn't call Schneider wise, but he does usually help Anne or the daughters, like, you know, whatever the conflict is, he does tend to like give them some answers, mm. you know, help them find their way yeah. in a weird way, like a parental figure, not a paternal figure. The new Schneider.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little about him because I think he's much more fascinating in the remake than he was in the 1970s version.
Yeah.
So do you have any opinions on this?
Oh, we'll let you go first.
Okay, fine. So I think he's a recovering addict. Mm-hmm. That's number one. He is clearly still addicted to sex though, right? Because he's like constantly having floozies around. But he's also, interesting enough, he's also an immigrant. He's a Canadian immigrant. And I love how he is woke enough to like realize it's just like his experience still is much different than that of the Cuban Americans that he's part of their family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he recognizes that just he's white. Like Trump doesn't have a problem with his kind coming from the North. It's about the people coming from the South.
Yep.
And then on top of that, yeah, he's another good sense of another good set of comic relief. But I think he's also a great foil for Penelope when it comes to like seeing like the mistakes that a parent raising you can have on the children. Cause that's kind of how he's constantly used. It's just like he suffered from the addiction mostly because him and his parents had such a bad relationship.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's usually like he kind of is a warning almost.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's also has that sense of like found family with them.
And he's almost like he lives in a bubble, essentially. Yeah. You know, and always is able to look at the glass half full.
Yeah, because he's also rich.
Yeah, so like life is swell for him. But the only thing that I would say that is kind of for me is just his relationship with women and the way he talks to women in front of the children.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, the sitcom were reality,
mm-hmm.
I would have a huge problem. And that representation of how he treats women being shown to Alex and Elena. But that's the only thing. So I was thinking about this because, you know, we've recently always been talking about why do we think this was made,
mm-hmm.
and on top of what was it needed. And I was listening to the theme song by Gloria Estefan, who I also grew up with and I love. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it and I'm like, you know, it's called One Day at a Time. And the theme song's the same and the premise of a single mother and Schneider, that's all there. But outside of that, this is a very unique new show. There are similarities to the original, but it's very much its own show, in mm-hmm. my opinion. It could very well be its own thing. And yet, and I know that the original people created it, Norman Lear and stuff, and yet it is technically a revival remake of the original One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it. Do you think this show would have a third season if it wasn't called One Day at a Time?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You think so?
If they gave this show like a whole different name.
You think it would still be around? Because here's the thing, too.
I don't know if it would survive on Netflix. I think it would be like it would need to be on a network. Here's why, because of the format. But I would argue that, yes, this show would have a third season if it wasn't hinging on this one day at a time. And well, I'm going to also make the argument,
yeah,
based off of the beginning, how we talked about, we really didn't know about this show.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of didn't depend on the name recognition. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Okay, but who's the demographic?
Oh, I for this one, I really think they're going for a Hispanic audience.
Yes. And age group wise, I think they're kind of going for baby boomers. Because let's face it, like I said earlier.
You think this one's baby boomers?
Yeah. Millennials don't watch sitcoms. Mm. They don't. Obviously, I'm a millennial. I know a lot of millennials. Nobody knows the show. The only reason why I know the show is because of my mother and stuff. The millennials that I know, not only are they not watching the show, they don't fucking know the show exists.
Interesting.
And so I'm basing this on what I know. And I also know that we are so over sitcoms. Millennials don't care for sitcoms. The things that they binge are other stuff, right? But not only is this a sitcom, this is a format. Sitcoms are huge in the 70s and 80s and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is a format that that generation, the ones that are slightly older than us, are very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And it's about a family, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a revival of a show you saw in your youth. I mm-hmm. do think that this show is targeted to an older audience. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's also for Hispanic and stuff, and outside of that. But I think it's very much targeted to an older audience. Because it's targeted to an older audience,
mm-hmm.
I think that's why they called it One Day at a Time. And that's why, and I'm not, it's not to fault for the show. The show's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I do hope that it, were it called something else, it would have an audience. But part of me thinks that because also, what kind of representation is there for like Latino families on television, period, other than Jane the Virgin? Representation was there back then? I know of one show called Que Pasa USA, and that wasn't even a show that was on the network. Exactly.
Que Pasa USA, that sounds racist.
Oh my God.
No, it was a regular show about Cubans, actually.
Oh, George Lopez show.
The George, which, is that on anymore?
No.
There's practically no shows. And it's just, so this is how you make it more, this is how you get a show like this mm-hmm. in more households, I think. Mm-hmm. So, in a weird way, I think it was kind of brilliant of them because they know that, like, let's say, you know, non-Hispanic people, a guaranteed way for them to watch it, call it One Day at a Time.
Interesting. I don't know if I have a counter argument to that. I think that's a pretty solid argument in terms of who this target demographic is for this show. Older people. I don't know what proof you have for me that like millennials aren't watching comedies because like
No, I'm not saying comedies. I'm saying sitcoms. I told you they love The Office. They love Parks and Rec.
Still sitcoms. They're not
different,
multi-camera
but they're different.
Sitcom.
They're not in live audience multi-cam
setups.
Yeah,
multi-camera. Okay, I'll give you that. Multi-camera sitcoms are not popular anymore.
Yeah. I like comedy is different. And when I mean sitcoms, I mean okay. that.
I was getting confused. I'm just like, who's not watching sitcoms? Like sitcoms are quite popular.
The format of the show is very old school.
Yes. I don't think these shows have live audiences though.
Well, they present themselves too.
I'm pretty sure that's all like fake sound
yeah,
effects.
Probably just like How I Met Your Mother. That was like one of the last ones that millennials watch. A lot of us, you know, choose to not own televisions. That's become more and more of a thing and not have cable and stuff. Mm-hmm, so there's a lot of factors to it, and comedies and stuff as a whole and sitcoms as a whole have changed. My main thing is that because this is the format, the live cam, multi-cam live audience situational comedy, is so familiar for that generation that mm-hmm. I really think that these are the people who are really watching it. And I think these are the people who are also telling their kids, you have to watch the show. You'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll love it. It's up their alley. And I think millennials should be watching this show.
Yeah.
I know a couple of my friends who, if they knew this show existed and watched it, they would like fucking, you know, they would leap for joy probably. Yeah.
I don't know if they'd leap for joy, but
they would leap.
They leap for season 3 coming out in 2 weeks.
We weren't paid.
Give us money, Netflix.
So do you think this remake was revival was needed? I think we essentially answered that. But.
I think it was. I think Norman Lear going up to Sony and telling him, like, I want to make this show, but with Hispanics.
Yeah.
Smart. Brilliant decision. Why?
Thank you.
Why did you? Why now? Oh, actually, no. I could tell you the why now.
Yeah, definitely.
The Trump era.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it is. The smartest decision that Netflix made was like kind of making this show. And
yeah. And I think they, you know,
this is a clear response to the Trump era that we're in right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's a shame that there's not more shows like this. And I do think the only way that like people would watch it is if you label it something that you're already familiar with and you're like, oh, I guess I'll give this show about these, you know, Spanish people a shot
mm-hmm.
because it's called One Day at a Time and stuff. And I hope that more come from it. And I guess overall, it just makes me sad for what could be, you know, because we're like as progressive as we are. We aren't.
Oh, most certainly.
The fact
that, you know, I was like kind of into some of these storylines that were being presented in the original 1970s, One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
It kind of shows just like, oh, shit, we still have a long way to go.
But yeah, should we do a lightning round?
Yeah, let's do a lightning round.
Okay.
Lightning round.
So, do we want to start with the mamas, Penelope versus Anne?
Let's start with the mamas.
Penelope versus Anne.
I'm going to go with Penelope.
I'm going to go with Penelope.
I'm going to preface this by saying I have seen, obviously, more Penelope than I have Anne, so that's not really a fair fight. Much respect to Anne, Bonnie Franklin, great performance.
Yeah.
Weirdly, very, very attractive. Like for 1970s woman, I don't usually find like people from the past like attractive for some reason. And here she is.
Find people from the past.
I thought you were going to be like, I don't find women attractive, but no, it's people from the past.
It's like if you're before the 80s, I just don't find you attractive. You're just like a weird figment or something. You're not real. You know what I mean? But there was that episode where she was, where the college kid had the hots for her.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, it's like, what does he see in her? I'm like, oh, you know what? I see it. She is very sexy.
Yeah.
And same thing goes for Penelope, though. Penelope
she's so sexy. She for is. Her mom.
And you know what I really appreciate about Penelope? They gave her like a real body.
They did.
She's not like she looks a lot like Eva Longoria, but she's not that waif figure. And I appreciate that so much because it's so much true to like what Hispanic women.
Relatability, you know? So many factors on why I pick Penelope. Great mom. Again, another one who's a mother, not a friend. A real person. It seems that the way they depict her, even though this also has a lot of sitcom tropes that really make me roll my eyes, but I'll forgive it for the overall good things about the show. And yeah, like, when she came out in the quinces in her dress, I was just like, oh, damn, mama. Yeah,
tetas were out.
She was hot. I guess we would compare Elena to
the oldest daughter, Julie. Yeah.
Yeah. Elena or Julie?
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with Julie. Only because I saw that dark... She goes through some shit, like, also in her show, though.
Yeah.
And I appreciate Alex's coming out story a lot. But, man, the fucking shit that they throw at Julie because of... And then also the hard life that, like, Mackenzie Phillips lived.
Yeah.
It's just like...
I understand.
I'm going to go with Julie on that one.
I'll have to go with Elena just because of the, again, you know, yeah, like...
I get it.
Identity factor and stuff. I really liked her relationship. She finds a girlfriend in season two.
She does.
With a gender non-conforming girl.
I think it's kind of sweet the way they did it too.
It is, yeah, because she's so awkward and she does not know how to handle it. Although, good for her. I didn't have my first like real kiss and experience until I was like 19. This girl's like 16. But that's also, it was harder when you were younger being gay and to like find people and to like experience things. Yeah. When you were, so like, good for the young ones. They're going to experience themselves younger and younger.
I don't know.
Like straight kids do.
I'm trying to think. I had like my first gay experience was like 15, I think.
Yeah. And then you like met the love of your life as your first boyfriend and stuff. Like, you're not a regular gay person. Like, we can't go by you.
Fair.
Barbara or Alex?
They're kind of a tie. So the few episodes I've seen of Barbara, she doesn't really do much. She's just like kind of that teenager. And
same for Alex, yeah.
Yeah, Alex. I like Alex. I think, like, you know, I think some of the stuff that they start exploring with him in terms of like his identity as Hispanic.
Yeah.
When all your friends are white, like, what is that, you know, being the other? I like that. And if they can kind of like progress a little more, like, he'd probably be a fuller fleshed out character. But,
for sure.
You know, I think one of the good Alex storylines that there was this season was after their dad walked out at the quinces, Alex kind of developed a relationship again with his father. But they made it abundantly clear that like Alex was constantly berating him for like what he did to Elena. And that's part of the reason like how he ends up seeing the light. So good for Alex.
Yeah.
To stand up to your dad.
I'll go with Barbara on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Wisecracking.
Okay.
You know, and really actually, like, you know, to me, the more sarcastic you are, the more it's just like you're a perceptive person. So for like the youngest daughter, you know, in this family, and just like, I, you know, she had a good head on her shoulders after it all. And
yeah,
and the relatability factor. I mean, this is all about like how relatable I find these people and how much I see of myself in them. And I see a little bit of myself in Barbara, you know, because I am an incredibly perceptive, funny person.
Yeah. Valerie Bertinelli is adorable, though.
Yeah.
Like, she, in the show, I loved, like, her outfits. Cute.
Very cute.
Very cute.
cute little white girl. Mm-hmm. I don't know who we would compare Lydia to.
There's no
comparison. There is no comparison because Lydia is life.
Lydia is. There was no character similar to Lydia.
Yeah, no. Lydia is so great. So. I guess the last one would be Schneider's.
Schneider's. I like New Schneider.
Yeah, I like New Schneider.
I like New Schneider. He's
not as creepy as the point.
He's so much sexier.
Yeah.
He is. What? Like, look at Old Schneider. He looks like Mario. They're from both Super Mario.
I mean, they're both like kind of tropey sitcom characters, and they're for like a very specific reason because you always need like that kind of like, hey everybody, who comic like relief. Comes in and But I guess the new Schneider is less creepy, even though he's disrespectful to women.
New Schneider is getting the opportunity to grow up.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Like he's growing up.
I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't really care for Schneider personally.
Wow.
He's just so tropey.
You're so racist.
Fuck Canadians. Build the wall. Okay. So that's it for one day. Did you just get that?
It took a while to register. I was just like, build a wall. Like, why are we kicking Mexicans? Oh, you said Canadians.
All right. One day at a time. Wow. We really broke that down. One show at a time.
Thank you. You got that pun. Thank you guys for listening to Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
As a reminder,
please follow us on social media.
And you can email us at remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
And as usual, rate us on your podcast app, you know?
Yeah.
Give us 5 stars. Give us 3 or higher.
Yeah.
You know, please. And I think that's all we have to say on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
So.
On that note, thank you for listening. And until next time.
Stay unoriginal.